Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast.
I do feel like there'll be a couple of does coming. I think the first does normally come in November 1st, November 2nd. Just a very few. But they know that, and they're going to be out trying to find them.
Hey, guys. This is Episode 7. I'm Canyon Clark here with Nate Burgess, Scott Clark, and Jeff Reyes back this week. So we're getting into the exciting part of the year.
Yes.
Our favorite part of the year is this still coming up this weekend. This is a really good week. This rain's coming in kind of dampened today and tomorrow, but this weekend looks like it should be really good with the weather and the wind moving out. So wanted to talk a little bit about the end of the pre-rut. I know I did a video on that last week if you guys want to see some more stuff on just the pre-rut, because tonight we're going to get into a little bit of that, but mostly we're going to be talking about the first phase of the rut, because we won't be doing another one of these until the 5th of November. And then we'll be getting into like that best week of the season when they're really chasing hard, cruising hard, and looking for does and chasing and all that stuff. So we're going to talk about the first phase of the rut tonight, kind of what we're taking out to the woods with us, kind of a what's in your pack kind of thing. We'll talk about some different calling stuff that we use or don't use and why. Get into some other things, decoys, scents, all that stuff, and then maybe our favorite stands for the first part of the rut, not necessarily our just hardcore rut stands, but where we're going to be, what we're looking for this first phase of the rut. So we're not going to be in Bowhunter magazine or North American Whitetail this week. There is a lot of good stuff I found in there from both November issues, but we'll get into that sometime later. I wanted to just kind of go over this stuff tonight because none of them were really focused on the first part of the rut, and that's what we've got going on. So that's what I wanted to talk about. But before we get into that, like we do every week, we'll have the field report. I don't know, Jeff, if you've been out since last weekend or not, or Nate, but we'll start with what's kind of going on in the shop.
Not a lot going on this week. I don't know if the guys just aren't hunting because they're saving up their time for what's coming up, or the deer aren't moving. We did see... Actually, one today that started smelling a little musky, like a buck. First one so far, so it's coming.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. From skinning the other day, I noticed a couple of those bucks, that bigger one that I caped out, starting to smell a little bit.
The ones we are getting in, I'm talking to the guys, they're using the word checking a lot more than they are chasing. Mm-hmm. Nobody says anything about chasing, but they have seen a few checkings.
Which makes sense for where we're at this time of year. So
I think, you were skinning the other day, we noticed one or two of them. Their necks were starting to swell up on them too. So,
yeah,
that's getting me.
I got out a couple times this week. One time, two times. I know I went yesterday afternoon and didn't see anything. That could have been a product of where I was at too. And I got in a little late, but it's a close spot. I don't hunt a lot, so that's why I went where I went. And the wind wasn't really right for where I could go that late. But the other time, I'm wanting to say it was since the last podcast, seeing several does still, a couple mornings last weekend, having a couple young bucks, haven't really seen a lot of mature bucks up in daylight yet. I know starting to get some pictures. Nate, you're starting to get some pictures. I want to get in on that here in a second. I did see one decent buck up on his feet, but not close enough to shoot or anything like that. So, Nate, like I said, I know you're starting to see a few on camera at least.
Yep. Tuesday morning, I was off work. We were going to try to cut beans. We were sure hoping we'd get done cutting beans this week. So I was not hunting Tuesday morning. Man, I wish I would have been. Two of the bucks I wanted to shoot were up 40 minutes after daylight even. Was when the first one was moving, 7:10, I think, was when he was out running around. right there where I would have probably been had I been hunting. The other one came through a 740. He's a big five-year-old. That's the first daylight picture I've got of him this year. He was out moving 740. I think he was headed back where I think he beds. Like I said, he does not move in daylight. I've not got any daylight pictures of him this year until Tuesday morning. I really don't think he was bumped either. Nobody should have been anywhere around there. So anyway, Tuesday morning, they were out moving. I've got another camera that's tucked down in close to bedding. I checked the card on it. There's like 8 different bucks hitting that scrape. Couple of pretty good ones, you know, but they're all hitting the scrapes really hard. Went out and changed a whole bunch of batteries on some cameras in another place. We've got like a 3-acre food plot over there. 9 scrapes around the edge of that. Of course, there's plenty of room, you know, for them to all hit those scrapes and everything. One camera back down on the creek in that spot. I found 4 scrapes in the woods just walking to that camera, probably 150 yards in. Mm-hmm. So they're, I think they're really hitting the scrapes hard. I think they're really probably got their turf nailed down where they're planning to spend rut. I think they probably got all that established now, and I think this weekend is going to get really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And that reminds me, we did talk about some pre-rut hunting on the last podcast we did too last weekend, a lot of scrape stuff. So kind of seeing come to fruition what we were talking about with them hitting scrapes, because that's something I noticed too going and checking a camera yesterday. There was several fresh scrapes, you know, on the field edge, and then one, actually, as I was leaving a stand earlier this week, noticed 2 or 3 inside the woods that were definitely fresh, for sure. So that's kind of your guys' field report for this week. I'm thinking we're going to have a lot more to talk about next week. So would you want to add something, Jeff? I didn't think you'd been out.
I went out Sunday during that
heat wave that
we had.
Yep.
And that hurricane winds.
Yeah.
You know, the best part about that was it kept the pterodactyls blowed away from me, so yeah. I was able to enjoy my hunt. No, actually,
save the turkeys from the mosquitoes.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to go, but...
I know, but you were scared.
No. To take a page out of Ron White's book, it's not that the wind is a-blowing. It's what the wind is a-blowing.
And it was blowing the mosquitoes away.
I don't
away.
Care how quiet you get in there and sit down. If a 75-foot... hickory comes falling down beside you, you know.
Hey, as long as it falls beside you, you're good.
Yeah, but I'm thinking the blades from the helicopter, you know, the air ambulance coming in and landing is probably going to ruin your deer hunt. I ain't going when it's blowing that hard.
Well, I went because I'm not scared. And anyways.
I'm just cautious.
Well, yeah, I know. We get that way as we get older. But anyways. No, I seen some does, and I seen some deer moving a little bit before dark, actually within good shooting light. So, I mean, they was out moving around, but as far as bucks and that goes, I didn't see none.
Mm-hmm. I will say, too, I just remembered Sunday was when I went out checking all those cameras, like I said. Since it was so windy, I decided I'd go and do all that then. I found 2 younger bucks dead in creeks. Sunday. We had talked about EHD kills earlier on in the podcast. I said I hadn't had none of that. The one was pretty fresh. There's a chance that some of the neighbors might have shot him, but I really don't think so. He's a 4-pointer. He was about 100 yards from their line, but I haven't talked to him. They haven't said anything about shooting a little one, but I really don't think they would have. He's a long way from any road. He's not roadkill. And that creek's not got very much water in. He could have been EHD. I don't know. There's just some little bitty water holes there. Then found one that's probably been dead for a month or 6 weeks at that other spot. And he was down in a deep pool of a creek. So anyway, I kind of figured that was EHD that I was seeing there.
Yeah. So well, I checked my camera. I didn't see no fresh activity on my mock scrape that I made. You know, nothing that said that there had been a buck through there. Of course, I wouldn't know because my idiot butt, whenever I put my SD card in my camera the last time, I forgot to slide it from
lock
to unlock. So it was locked, and so I couldn't tell you what walked in front of my camera last week.
Yeah, you don't get good pictures when the card's locked.
No, you don't.
Any pictures.
Actually, no. None.
Yeah.
And I still got the card in my pocket, and then still on lock.
But still locked up, so you're still not getting pictures.
I still ain't getting pictures, thank goodness.
Well, not to get on too much of a rabbit hole or down a rabbit trail with that EHD thing, but definitely could be what you're seeing. You see a lot of it on Facebook and stuff where guys, oh, he was dead here, and, you know, they don't put a lot of information into it other than he was dead and there's water close by, so it had to be EHD. Well, they don't mention if there's a road close by or if their neighbors could have shot him or if the coyotes could have got him or stuff like that. So I'm not saying it's not EHD, but we don't have to jump right to that just because the deer's dead, because there are a lot of reasons that deer die. Now, at the same time, it definitely could be.
Yeah, it could be, but we haven't had the drought, and EHD is mostly caused by drought. Yeah, and we've had good rains all summer long. Actually, it's been pretty wet. Something's been
wet. We had that one pretty dry stretch there towards the end of summer, but or into early fall, I guess it was, right?
Yeah, but
I'm thinking right.
Yeah, but I don't know that that would.
I don't know if it's long enough.
Yeah,
I know they've said there's been a lot of people talking about it going on, especially up kind of north of us, some Effingham County stuff. But I don't know if any of that's been confirmed yet or not. So don't want to get too worried about it, but at the same time, you know, it's, you know, it could be. I mean, it, I guess it's from the midge that gets in that, in the water, and they kind of all use it and gets up in them and affects their brain or whatever it is that EHD does. And then
typically it's standing water. So if you,
right,
if you have a dry, stagnant water, so it takes a dry season typically. Doesn't always mean that though.
Right. So anyways, definitely could be. Hopefully it's not, but I'm just wanted to point that out, not because of what you said and what you're seeing necessarily, but just because you guys are seeing people post, oh, it's EHD, it's hitting us hard. Don't necessarily, I mean, you don't have to think that that's exactly what's going on, because it may not be, and it may be too, but I haven't seen any actual confirmed by the IDNR or biologist or anything like that yet. It's a lot of hearsay and guys seeing, and you know, just based off the past. And unfortunately, I think there's part of some people that kind of want that just so they can say it happened or whatever it is. I don't know, but I've seen a lot of guys talking about it, and I don't, and it may be it, but a lot of times I think it's probably jumping the gun a little bit. But not to discredit what you're saying, because obviously it could have been, you know.
Yeah.
But like I said, don't want to get too big of a rabbit hole on that, because we'll probably do some episodes around that kind of stuff next summer or something, but when it does get dry. But tonight, I wanted to talk about the first thing, what's in your pack. So I carry a backpack with me. I know some guys don't carry any kind of bag at all. I also have a fanny pack for when I go. Not like a Rut Daniels fanny pack with the Allen wrenches in it and all that, but a fanny pack for when I go with my climber, because I can't have it on my back, obviously. So I'll kind of talk about what's in there. Jeff, what are you taking to the woods with you? Because it'll change too. At least it does with me. From the early season, I'm not necessarily carrying all the same stuff that I am now during the first phases of the rut. So what are you taking with you, whether it be a pack or no pack or whatever?
I know,
obviously, aside from your bow and your release, well, not your release, but me and Nate's release and all that.
Yeah, no. actually, this time of year, we're entering the seeking phase of the rut. And so the bucks, they're not chasing. They're running around, they're looking, and they're bumping does and stuff. And so, and they're also getting ready to start setting dominance, you know, who's mature and who ain't. And so I don't, of course, you know, I've said before, I don't use calls on that much. If I was to use a call this time of year, what we're getting into, I would use a, like a Primo's doe bleat can, or I would use some rattling horns. Now I wouldn't get crazy with them. You know, I'd tinkle them around and stuff and maybe get a buck's attention with it. But that's about all I would use if I was going to do it. And I've used them before with success at this time of year. But, yeah, that's about it. That's besides the basic essentials, water, beer, whatever.
Right. So you're saying you're taking your maybe a bleak can and some rattling horns. And then,
pretty much. That's all I'm going to take with me.
And obviously, aside from gloves and hats and all that
stuff.
Well,
yeah. But
like,
I mean,
deer hunting stuff.
As far as deer hunting, I take like the bleak can, some rattling horns, and of course, I would not leave home without my Ridge Hunter Outdoors buck tarsal.
That's right. Shameless plug.
Buck tarsal spray and doe tarsal spray.
That's right.
Which, you know, is available online. So.
Or at Clark's Deer Processing.
Or at Clark's Deer Processing here in downtown Wayne City.
That's right. In the Mecca.
Yeah.
So, okay.
But
so,
no, actually, I have.
How come we're not in this commercial, mate?
I plug you all the time, but I have seen, you know, some interesting results with the with the scents. And
I always say it's not the end-all, be-all, but.
No, but if, it gets their attention away from you onto something else.
Deer use their nose for everything, and they use scent to check each other with, and they know deer by their scent.
Identify each other.
So why? I mean, if you have that available to you, I think it's go ahead and use it. I know some guys that just don't use any scent at all, and they're totally against it. Oh, I see mature deer all the time without using any scent. Well, that's good for you, but if you can use it, it's not hurting anything.
No.
You know, I've yet to see a big buck run away from the buck tarsal spray. I have seen some younger bucks act a little funny around it because it comes from a more mature deer.
But, yeah, no, that is an unidentified deer, you know, that they don't, they're not familiar with. You know, I guess the best way to use it is, if you really want to know, is just put the spray the buck tarsal spray on your front and the doe tarsal spray on your back and see what happens.
You can do that.
Kind of brave there.
I wouldn't recommend it, but, you know, you never know.
But anyway, fine with it. If you got that at your disposal, why not use it, in my opinion?
Right.
And I'm not saying that just because I sell it, because I actually started making the stuff because I wanted it to use it myself. So, but anyways, so that's kind of what you're looking at. Mine's going to be similar. But, Nate, what are you taking to the woods with you this time of year, aside from, like, the obvious essentials?
I'm going to carry extras of everything. I always carry a second release, tied, so where it can't come out of that backpack. I always want to have that with me. Wind checker, I'd call that essential. Grunt call. I'm not going to – I call conservatively is what I'd like to say. I feel like if a deer can see well, if they can see where you're at and they will be able to know that there's not actually a deer there if you're calling at them, I'm not going to call at them.
I want to get into that a little bit too. Like we'll get into that, like when we're using them, how we're using them, why we're using them, stuff like that as far as the calls too. So.
If I've got one, if I see a buck that I'd like to get over closer, and I think it would be worth a shot, I'll probably start by bleating right now. If that don't work, I might try a grunt. I might try a grunt as a last resort right now. That's about all I'm going to do. More than that, I'm probably just going to chalk it up as a loss, and he wasn't coming this way.
Right.
But I'm not going to mess with him very much right now.
Yeah.
What else do I have? I do have, I talked about it early on. Can't remember what they call it.
The cruncher deal you're talking about.
Yeah, not the acorn cruncher. Don't ever, no, we don't want to, get that.
Drawing squirrels in, are you?
No. You remember that? You remember that call?
Uh-uh.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't guess.
I
don't supposed to sound like they're munching on acorns?
No. Yeah, man. You ought to look that up. I don't associate me with that thing. this thing, I don't know how to describe it. But it you can make it sound like leaves crunching, and of course you can do it in a rhythm, in a cadence, so it sounds like a deer walking. It's got some prongs on the side of it you can drag up and down the tree on the bark of your tree. It kind of sounds like a deer horn, you know, dragging up and down a tree a little bit, trying to mimic a rub noise. And it's also got a little wooden thing on it where you can pop. It's spring-loaded, and it sounds like little twigs breaking. Of course, you could take leaves up in your tree if you want. You could smash them with your hand, you know, to try to make the walking sound. You can take little twigs up there and break with you, too. But it does sound like something moving around, and I don't feel like that's something that guys are using much. Have you ever tried you ever tried tying horns together? You ever tried tying horns together and dropping and working them at the bottom of your tree? That, to me, that would be more realistic.
That's more realistic because, you know, and I don't know how sound travels. I'm not no big expert on all that stuff. But, you know as well as I do that sound, say, like, where if I was hunting deer stands, especially down there in the bottoms and stuff, I'd get at least between 25 and 30 foot high is what I'd like to be at. Well, you know, sound travels different at that height than what it does at a deer's height.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if it made a difference or not, and I'm not saying that it did, but it just seemed to me like it'd be more realistic. And I did. I'd have tines tied to a rope, and I'd drop them down there, and I'd jerk on it, you know, and get them banging and clashing and in the leaves.
Yep.
You know, and try to mimic the sound of it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a little story about that. I was hunting with Canyon's mother one time, and it was one of them deer was running everywhere kind of nights, and I'd taken everything at the kitchen sink with me. You know, I'd been drag ragging and rattle and antlers and scent and just a whole 9 yards, because there's deer running everywhere, and I think she'd shot her arrows all out and went down and got them and recovered them, and got back up, and it's one of them times. And it's getting dark, and there's some nice deer in there, and so I've got my rattling antlers, and I'm tinkling one last time, and, you know, we kind of hear something off to the distance, and thinking, well, okay, it's time to get down. They're all gone. They're not going to see us. It doesn't really matter anyway. We're leaving. So I got these antlers in my hand that I'm using to rattle, and I thought, well, heck, I just pitch them over this. I've got a climber, right? So I climb up with everything, and I'm just going, well, this would be easier just pick them up off the ground. So I just pitch them off. As soon as they hit the ground at the base of this tree, here come this stud. I mean, it was too dark for me to see because I'm facing the tree anyway because I'm in a climber, so I'm getting ready to climb down. So I'm literally standing up facing the tree, and I just pitched him off to the side. And he is right there to the base of my tree. He came right there. And Canyon's mom's hunting, you know, 20 yards. I can see her. She can see me. I'm going, shoot him. She's can't see him, shoot him, I can't see him, shoot him. And anyway, he ended up walking off. We're yelling at him, not yelling at each other, but we're, you know, yelling back and forth. Doesn't bother him a bit. He's interested in what those antlers that hit the ground at the base of my tree.
Man.
He finally turns around and walks off. Don't know how big he was. He was a stud.
Oh, man.
You know, you did that to me one time, too. Shoot him. I'm like, I can't see. And you said, just shoot the son of a...
I did not. Yeah, you're talking about the time you froze up?
I did not freeze up. I could not see.
Locked up and couldn't pull the trigger is what happened.
No.
At any rate, that you said talking about the antlers at the base of the tree, that reminded me that they absolutely... I don't know. Obviously, he was close in the area. I don't know if he'd ever came in.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm rattling up 20 feet in the air, because I'd get 20 to 25 feet. I had a string tied my bow, and when my bow came up off the ground, I was high enough.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'd have came into that. He absolutely came into them.
Yep.
They kind of tinkled when they hit the ground and made that sound. I mean, he was right there.
Yeah.
He's talking about the deer you missed.
Don't bring me in on
it. No, she didn't shoot.
Oh, I thought you missed that deer.
No, she didn't shoot at it.
There you go. So, anyways, kind of back to what we were originally started talking about before we got on the calls and all that. Did you finish up what you were having in your pack?
I've got I carry probably too much stuff in there. Pretty much everything that I would have on myself, I've got an extra one in the pack. I try to prepare for anything stupid that I might do and carry it with me, you know. Little saws, you know, little pruners, all that stuff. I mean, you never know when you might need that stuff. But as far as calls and stuff, that's all I got in there. Grunt call, bleat call, and that little thing that you can make it sound like a deer walking.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
I looked it up. I think it's called the leaf cruncher. Actually, I think that's what it's called. Does that sound right?
Man, I can't remember.
Not the acorn cruncher.
No.
Don't associate me with that. I have never crunched one in with an acorn cruncher.
It's always the first time.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But that other thing, I do think nobody else is, I don't know if anybody else has got one. That's the only thing you could do, nonverbal, you know, that you could sound like a deer, you know. And you don't have to grunt at him. You ain't got to bleat at him. If you sound like a deer walking, they're used to that. Nobody else is making that noise.
Mm-hmm.
That might be enough to get him curious enough to come over there and give you a look.
Yep. So what I've got in mind is similar to you guys, aside from like gloves and hats and extra stuff, extra release, camera stuff, I'll have generally an SD card in case I want to flip a camera or change a camera or whatever, whether I had planned on it or not. Grunt tube that has the bleak call in it, but I still have the bleak can as well, the good old Primos, the can, I think that's what it's actually called. I've got some Night and Hail rattle and antlers, so I don't have the actual antlers anymore, which I used to carry. It's just so much easier to carry that little compact thing. It flips around and clips into each other. So I got that for rattling. Obviously, I got my, I take buck tarsal spray with me. Now, in the next coming week or so, I'll probably start using the doe tarsal spray as well. And I don't take any scent elimination with me, I don't guess. I leave it in the truck, so it's not really in my pack. But another thing I have that I thought Nate might mention is a turkey call. I always have a turkey call in my pack, too, for two reasons. Number one, it's just a mouth call. If I'm sitting there and I've got a bunch of does coming in where I think they might see me, I'll go ahead and pop that thing in. And then if they see me but they don't smell me, I may chirp on it a couple times. And then I had it before where I know I've never personally done it, but I know, Jeff, you told me. I don't remember who you're telling me did it, but they come in and see them. You just hit that, you chirp a couple times on that turkey call, and they just kind of flick their tail and go on. If they don't see exactly what you are or smell you, kind of take you for a turkey. And the other thing is, I go ahead and buy my $10 fall turkey permit, so if I see one coming in, they're really hard to kill from a tree, because if you think about it, they're born looking up, you know. Yeah. So, but it's worth a shot. So I got the turkey call in there, too. That's the only one I think I had that you guys really didn't mention. But
right. And another thing is, too, also, turkeys have two legs, just like we do. And so when you're walking through the woods, you know, if you just chirp on that turkey call a little bit,
mm-hmm.
You know, well, then the deer will associate your footsteps with theirs, as long as you're not, you know, being real heavy about it. But still, you know, they'll hear the rustling leaves, and you blow on that, chirp on that turkey call a little bit. You know, they're going to think, well, it's just another daggum turkey walking through the woods,
right?
And they're not going to pay as much attention to you. That's just like, and I was thinking while you was talking about that, the guy that got me started bow hunting was Coach Jerry Wilson,
mm-hmm.
And Coach Wilson was what, Scott, 6'8"?
No, he was 6'4" or 6'5".
Well, anyways, he's a big man.
Yeah.
And he was,
gets taller every year.
Whenever I was 14 years old, he was a big man.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd go deer hunting and stuff, and I'd be trying to sneak in, you know, and be all quiet, and old Coach Wilson, he'd just go boring through there, sound like an old grizzly bear walking through the woods, you know, and stuff. And I'd be like, you know, Coach, what? You know, ain't you trying? And he said, you don't hear no deer sneaking in, do you?
You know, right.
Where they come in, they don't care about making noise, especially the bucks and stuff. And, you know, he never really scared deer off walking that way.
Huh.
You know, he just bore in there like a bull in a china closet, and you know, he'd have success.
Yeah. I think I talked about that on a video, but as long as it's not unnatural noise,
right?
You know, they make noise too. So as long as I'm, you know, kind of, if I sound like they do, or, you know, if you chirp on that turkey call a little bit, and maybe they'll just take you for that instead of running off. They're coming to check it out. Maybe they'll just think, well, there's a turkey, I'm not going to go check it out. So it could be something to try for sure, especially if you got that call in your pack anyway, which I think is a good idea to have. Obviously, I have it, but even if you're not going to try to call in a turkey, I think there's a element to it that could help your deer hunting.
I had never considered that, but that's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
I also just, it just crossed my mind, I just heard somebody else say the last couple of weeks, they take a electronic coyote collar and they put it about 80 yards away from where they're hunting every time they go hunt an evening. They set it out there toward the truck, you know, on their way, and they set it about 80 yards away. And they said if they got deer close to them, you know, that they're wanting rid of, they'll hit a coyote howl on that thing, you know, after it's dark. And they said it'll kind of bust the deer, get them away a little bit. I never thought about that. I think it's a reasonable idea. And they said if they got to walk across a field or something to get out, they know there's deer out in the field, they'll just sit on the field edge and they'll howl a few times on that thing. Get the deer, hopefully, kind of move away somewhat naturally, and not just walk in the middle of them and bust them like a covey of quail.
Right.
So anyway, I thought that was a decent idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to try it, but it's a decent idea, I thought.
I did hear someone the other day, actually, that you said that, talk about when they got deer in the field and they're needing to leave, they'll wait till it gets dark, because there's a difference between blowing deer out in the daylight and in the dark. It seems like when you blow them off the field in the dark, if it's something like that, because their visibility is not as good, obviously they can see in the dark, but not like they can in the daylight, they won't go as far, and they'll probably come back, as opposed to in the daylight. When they blow out of that field, they're probably gone a long ways. He was talking about just sitting in the stand, and after it gets dark and he needs to walk out through that field, he'll just give a verbal coyote howl. And he said that normally clears it, or an owl hoot, you know, like an old hoot owl, and get him out of there. So I thought that was kind of a decent idea anyway. And like you said, I guess if you had the electronic call anyway for hunting, you could take it with you, but another one of those things you could just do verbally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, this right here is leading up to the best time, one of the best times to use a decoy.
Mm-hmm.
You throw a decoy out there, and all the verbal sounds that you're giving out is going to have more meaning to these bucks. Yeah.
Especially if you're on like a cut cornfield or a bottom field and they can see a long way.
Exactly.
Yep. Stick that thing out there. That you could do a lot of good with it for
sure. Oh,
yeah. I was going to, that's why I want to get your guys' thoughts on decoy, too.
Closest thing I ever had to a decoy was a Glendale buck.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to pack that son of a gun in one time. Nope, ain't happening ever again. They ain't going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it'd wear you out. But if you got something that them deer can see and associate with the sound that you're giving out, whether it's rattling or vocals, you know, give them something to look at. Yeah. I've always wanted to have, you know, a lightweight decoy. And I know they make them. I've just been a tight wad and ain't never done it. You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, a nice lightweight decoy that you can set out there where the deer can see it, blow your vocals if you see a buck coming through or whatever, give him something to look at. Man, I think that would be like one of the most amazing guns you'd ever have.
You know, we had a pro shop and back in the early 90s, they had those plastic decoys you take down and you had the bags. But we bought two of them at the pro shop and we would rent them out. So it was like $5 a day or $15 for the weekend, whatever it was, because, and guys, it depended on what your idea of success was. I think at that time, and maybe it was because of maybe lack of knowledge about how to use a decoy, because they were fairly new at the time. There wasn't a lot of studies out there. You couldn't really read a whole lot about them, other than the people that are trying to sell them would, you know, tell you anything you wanted to hear. But the entertainment value that the guys would get out of them, they'd put a deer tail on them and a little scent, and mostly little bucks, and mostly, you know, I don't remember too many people killing any hogs over them, but there was almost always a story with them, you know, as far as the deer and little bucks pushing around and maybe more activity. And so at that time anyway, it was a lot of entertainment.
That reminds me, Dusty, who we'll probably have on the podcast at some point. I've talked to him about maybe coming on. Him and his daughter, is that 2 years ago, I think? 2 years ago or 3 years ago. He's got videos of it. But they set up on a decoy, put some tarsal spray on it, and they killed two bucks on it, nice bucks, 125 to 135 inches, somewhere in there, both of them. Nice bucks within 10, 15 minutes, if that, of each other. Set up on that same decoy. Hers come in, she shot it. His come in, he shot it, you know, on the same decoy, on the same night, within literally minutes of each other using that decoy. So, Nate, you got any experience with decoys, or have you ever used them much, or you got anything on that?
I hunted over decoy one time with a guy back when I was doing a little video on. I think it just wasn't a good setup for a decoy, I think. I'm very confident it cost us a shot at a really, really nice buck. This guy knew that there was a monster in there. I mean, honestly, like a 180-inch buck. Humongous deer, biggest deer I've ever videoed, for sure. It's a food plot tucked way back in the woods. We took the decoy in there as a big, aggressive-looking buck. I think it's a boss buck decoy, I think is what it was. Anyway, carried it down in there, set up. Probably 30 minutes, 45 minutes after light, this big buck, biggest buck the guy's got on the place, he comes sneaking in. We saw him, and then just seconds later, he sees the decoy. He's probably 40, 50 yards from the decoy, heading to that little food plot again. Just locks up completely, staring at it. He couldn't figure out what to do. Stood there for, I don't know, a little while, not too long. And then he starts picking his way fairly quick, trying to get around us and just completely out of there. A creek kind of cut up the property there. But he was trying to get out of there. He wanted away from that thing. We checked the card on the camera when we got down later on, the camera on that food plot. That buck had been through there like an hour before we got there. He'd been up, he'd made his circle on the neighbor's property, and he's coming back in. I think that if that decoy would not have been there, he probably would have ran that trail right back and went back down there where he was used to being. But anyway, in that instance, I think that decoy messed us up. You see so many guys have good success with them on those field edges.
Right. What time of year did you say that was?
First week in November.
It would have made sense for there to be a buck he didn't know. So it wasn't like he was seeing a deer that he didn't recognize or something. But yeah,
I think he just came up on it so fast.
Kind of caught him off guard.
Yeah, just all of a sudden there it was. He didn't have time to study it from a distance or anything.
Didn't smell it, obviously, or hear it or anything.
He did not, if I remember right, he did not have a way to reasonably get around the thing without getting right up on it.
Right.
To try to scent check it or anything.
And that's where you're, like you said, probably a lot to do with the particular setup
and
of the decoy.
And he was a big, smart buck. You weren't going to fool him easy.
He wasn't going to come in without checking it out first, as far as the scent, getting downwind probably. Yeah.
So it's kind of an up-in-your-face setup for him then.
I do not think it was a good instance to use a decoy at all. Right. You see so many guys having good luck with them on the field edges, where a buck can see it, think about it for a minute, before he's confronted with it.
Right, yeah. Just kind of judge him and size him up and decide if that's what he wants to go into or not.
Yeah.
But just like calling, using a decoy, you got to be smart about it, have the right setup, right situation. So now we've hit on calling, we've hit on what's kind of in our pack, some decoys. The last thing I want to go over is some stand setups. Like last week we talked about pre-rut. Now we're getting into the first phase of the rut where these bucks are going to be cutting doe trails, coming in downwind sides of food plots, maybe circling around the downwind side of a bedding area occasionally. They're looking for those first hot does coming in. So what are you, Nate, first going to be looking for? Kind of, we'll go into the pre-rut, so this weekend, and then on into the first week of November, that first phase of the rut. What's kind of some setups you're looking at?
Funnels. That's what I'm looking for. Anything that's going to cut him down without him knowing, get him right there close to me without him knowing. I'm not abandoning food sources necessarily, but I'm not really thinking about them too much. Morning sets, I'd like to be back in the woods, close to bedding like you're saying. I do feel like there'll be a couple of does coming. I think the first does normally come in November 1st, November 2nd. Just a very few. But they know that, and they're going to be out trying to find them, you know. I'd like to be sitting back on a ridge somewhere. The funnels, creeks, I feel like they're going to follow creeks, like you're saying, trying to cut trails. Just anything where they think they might run into one of those very first does. Just any funnel that's going to make him move past me close, pinch him down right there with me.
Mm-hmm. So I like that, what you said about those does coming in. I think there are times and places where you'll have does come in and like the third week of October, occasionally some more mature does, but most of them will start coming in, like you said, that first few days in November. And I don't know the studies on any of this or anything, I have to look them up, but the same does probably come in close to the same time every year. So I'm going to be looking at cameras again, like we always talk about from last year. If those same does are around, the bucks will know that they're going to be coming in around the same time too, and they'll remember that and come in and check those spots too. So if I got good pictures from last year around this October 31st, which I do in a couple different places, that's probably where I'm going to be keying in on. It is those intersecting trails, trails that come into food plots where those does are coming in, that the bucks are going to be coming and checking to see if they can smell that first estrus doe or whatever. And then obviously those good funnels like you're talking about. But Jeff, your thoughts on kind of where you're going to be setting up this weekend and then into next week, if you could go or whatever.
Travel corridors, pinch points, and I'm going to be between 20 and 30 yards inside the timber.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking field edges, food plots and stuff, that's where I'm going to be setting that, because, even though the bucks have got everything's on their mind, you know, the does and stuff, they're still going to be cautious at this point. Mm-hmm. They're going to be downwind where they can scent check the does without going into the field.
Yep.
And so, you know, they're going to be feeling more comfortable inside the timber. You know, if you're sitting on the edge of the timber, in the field edge, well, a lot of times them bucks will be behind you and you won't even know it. Mm-hmm. You know,
they're going to be downwind of you too.
Yep.
Yeah. That's where I think the food is still, it's not as important as the bucks coming in and eating it, but you can use it, I don't want to say as a decoy, but use the does in it kind of like one and hunt off the edge of it now where you're going to catch those bucks coming in, scent checking that food plot rather than going in.
I think absolutely. You do use the does as a decoy in that, like I said, guys right now are still, they're not talking about bucks chasing, they're talking about bucks checking. So if you're smart in the way you set up on the does, the bucks are going to be checking the does, not chasing. So use the wind, use the does to put yourself in a position for that. If you have them, if they're regular, if they're doing what they've always done.
Yeah, I think if you can get in close to those mature does and you know where they're going, where they're hanging out, it'd be a really good place to be. Because like I said, those are going to be the first ones to come in most often. Those mature does are going to be the first ones to come in. If you can find them, probably going to find where those mature bucks are because they're smart enough to seek out those first few does. And they'll get with those quick, and then you may not see them for another couple of days because they'll be kind of in an early lockdown with those first few does that are coming into estrus. But that's pretty much everything I wanted to cover tonight. I know we hit kind of a wide array of topics, but all focused around the first phase of the rut. Really exciting time of year to be out in the woods. November's just around the corner. It'll be here before we do our next podcast. So cool stuff there in the woods. I did want to say again, I think I said it last week, but we are doing our first Ridge Hunter Outdoors Big Buck Contest. You can register for that at ridgehunteroutdoors.com. Go to the link that says Big Buck Contest. You'll register on there. You can read all the rules and regulations. If you do that before the 31st, you will get, with your $50 entry fee, a bottle of Ridge Hunter Buck Tarsal Spray, a Big Buck Contest t-shirt, and then a koozie as well. So you're getting basically $30 to $35 back at your $50 just for registering. So go and do that. We do have our first entry from Sean Mitchell. It's 130 and eighth inch, 8-point, really nice deer. So he's on the leaderboard with that. Kind of an update for you guys.
Congratulations, Sean.
Yeah, I'll try to keep you guys updated on the leaderboard on the podcast too, and you can see that on Facebook as well. So thanks for listening, guys, and we'll catch you again next week.